Welcome to Easel Talk, the podcast for EaselInsight.com, with your hosts, Phil Stark and Gabor Svagrik. This podcast is created for artists by artists. To follow along with today's discussion, remember to download the show notes at EaselInsight.com/blog. And now let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to Easel Talk. My name is Gabor Svagrik.
And I'm Phil Stark.
And today we're going to talk about why color and value are relative. This is a big topic, and I'm sure we can do multiple posts about this, but we're going to try to tackle some of the bigger issues and try to help you out and hopefully explain things and simplify some of these things. So we're going to just kind of throw it out there. Color equals hue. If you hear hue,
right,
that means color. I think it get confusing with some terms.
Yeah, just to define terms first.
Actually, I wish instructors would, that's something I might incorporate into my classes, is that defining terms for this class.
Yeah. Well, even simple terms like value, we take it for granted because we know what it is, but a lot of people don't understand that tone. Value is tone.
Tone, yeah.
Darks and lights.
Yeah.
Not necessarily color, just the value.
Yeah.
Of darker light.
It can get confusing. Actually, my wife and I were listening to was it C.W. Mundy was talking about stuff, or one of these really good artists, and she was getting confused because the terms they were saying, so I had to almost translate partially some of it to her. So I think sometimes as professional artists, we do this all the time, and we have this in our head that, well, you must know it too, but that's I don't think that's a good way of approaching things. And I know when I'm learning about something too, I'm like, what did they say? I wish they would clarify it. So that's why we like to talk about a few of these terms that you...
And also throw in the term for color temperature, because that goes along with why color is relative, the use of color temperature, which is the warm and cool aspect of color. Blue being cool, yellow being the warm, and a bunch in between. So
yeah, and I'm sure some of you have purchased books on color, or I know Phil and I get questions about, what is a good book to pick up about color, and we usually are stumped because the ones that are out there, by the second page you're like falling asleep because it's not in context.
Yeah.
For us artists, it needs to be in context. Once we explain things in context more, then you get a wider gamut of information of, oh, okay, well, I that kind of happened in my painting. Kind of, I was painting a building or this or that, and I can kind of relate to that. But when somebody just talks about color and color theory, it's not in context.
Oh, yeah, so, it'll push you to sleep as well.
Yeah, so there's it's really...
I still go back to the best two books on color and composition and value that I've had or read would be Edgar Payne's Composition and Carlson's, which I say that all the time. People think those are probably the only two books I've ever read because that's the only ones I ever mention. Because there's a lot of after that just are not very good.
Yeah, and some of these things
two are really
good. We'll put into our show notes too, some of these things that are that we talk about, some of these things. And it is true that I know Phil and I, we love sunlight, and it is the goal a lot of times to suggest sunlight with color and value. It both has to be there, and value has to come before color.
Exactly.
And it's really important. And all, like, there's of course there's about 3-4 big things in painting, and they're all important, but there's literally an order of things. And I think when people mix up the order or skip the order is when the painting collapses.
Right.
Simple as that.
So if you talk about color being relative, you have to say or talk about value being relative first to get to color. Because what's important about color is the value. So, and both are relative. And we'll talk about what it means to be relative in a minute.
Yeah.
I always thought that meant, were they, related? Nothing to do with family relations. It has to do with the context they're put in and how their surroundings affect them. So
I mean, what ultimately matters is what's inside within that four square. of your painting. That's where the relationship has to make sense. Ken Oster said that when you mix your colors, look on your palette. It's mostly in harmony, right? The trouble starts when you put it on your canvas.
Yeah.
Where you place that color within context. That's why I talk about context, because it does matter in the painting itself, the imagery you try to portray, where you're going to place that color that you just mixed on your palette. So again, palette generally is in harmony, mm-hmm. but when you put it into context, when you're telling the story on the canvas, that's where trouble can start, or it can fall into the right place. And the best, if you're struggling with color, the best thing to do is literally break it down, you know, literally to the three mother colors plus white.
Right.
That's
right.
The best way.
Maybe plus that, add the fact that maybe more earth colors, they're easier to deal with,
yeah.
to start with. So if you get three primaries of what, blue, burnt sienna, yellow ochre.
Raw sienna or two.
Or more pure colors, blue, yeah. cad yellow light, cad yellow. Lizard crimson.
Yeah, still small. I mean, yeah. what Phil just said, still a small palette. Small palette is a really good thing, even for experienced painters. I mean, there's some good top-notch artists that we know. They don't have a large palette.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not...
I think it's the idea that when you have three colors like that, you can get a full value range. You can get, mix all the values. You can replicate almost all the local color you see, only very simple. You only have three choices, so it's easier to decide. And then you get full temperature. And if you can get those three things with a limited palette, you're all set. You don't need extra colors.
Yeah, and even when you look at your palette, even the value of color matters. I mean, I cannot get a dark color with a dark green. Let's say dark green. Let's niche it down to dark green. I cannot get a dark green without a dark base value of either like an ultramarine blue or black to start out with. Of course, I have to add yellow to it.
Right.
But I need that dark base.
Yeah.
So you need that dark value. You need that value range also of colors on your palette. You just it's impossible to mix a light lighter value of that same color. The problem is that we tend to substitute sometimes white, which is the killer of all colors. And so be careful on your substitution, meaning you want to, I'm talking specifically about white, meaning how much white you put in to lighten it up. That's why Phil and I, when we teach, if you want to mix a light green, we're urging you to put as little as of white into that mixture as possible, and make sure you have more the yellow in there,
right?
To ramp up the, you know, make sure
the white or yellow.
Yeah, you want it light. If you want it light but still have color in it, it gets very not tricky but more difficult, because you reach a point where you cannot get it lighter than what it is without putting white in there.
Right.
And that's where the rubber meets the road, is that how much white, right?
Which is a whole other podcast, yeah, maybe, of doing the value of the colors on your palette and why that's important to understand.
We're trying to keep this simple here for you. And again, color is one of these things that everybody has an opinion on, and again, it's as long as it's in context, because we can talk about it, but you got to show me on your painting.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, ultimately that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because the relative part comes when you put two colors next to each other. They affect each other. So color and value are relative because of its surroundings. And I guess as an example of that, if you want something to look lighter, make the values around it darker. You don't always, like Gabor said, don't add tons of white. You can make the surroundings darker. And that's what we mean by relative. It depends on what's around it. That affects the value. So if I have a white house, sunlit house, I can make it light, but if it doesn't look light enough, the answer isn't always just adding more white. That kills the color. But I can make the surrounding background darker, the darker green trees, darker violet mountains, and that makes that lighter house look lighter. So the relative value is real important to think about.
It's an illusion. I mean, that's all it is. We're illusionists. That's all it is. I call painters as illusionists because that's what we do. And it should be an illusion. It should be an illusion of you cannot paint reality because reality is reality. You cannot paint it. We can only interpret it.
Yeah, just suggest it.
Suggest it. And the same thing goes with color. If you want to make something look brighter, if you want the color to look stronger, you want the hue to look stronger, more powerful, one way of doing it is you don't need a lot of color in it. It's the opposite. You need a lot of grays.
Exactly.
And then put a little color next to that gray, right? Yeah. Less gray in it. Then that color will look so much more colorful.
Yeah.
And most students think that I need to put a lot of color in this painting, and then it's going to be really, it's going to look real colorful. But that is not true, because if you do that, it's going to yell at you. It's going to look horrible.
Right.
It's going to look garish. That's when you look at the internet and you just type a landscape painting, or you go into Pinterest or something, and it's the most garish paintings come up first. You really got to hunt for the better ones. You really got to know names to hunt for the good paintings.
Yeah.
You literally have to, like, that's how you search for paintings. Because if you put a general term, search term in, look what comes up. Yeah, not pretty.
Because garish is always better.
Yeah.
The answer is always stronger color.
Yeah, stronger color. Or people, so it's not, it's actually the opposite. If the artist does not understand color.
A good example is like with still life, or maybe the easiest example. If a batch of red roses is my focal point, my goal isn't to make the red roses as strong as I can. It's to mute the surrounding objects and shapes and the background and adjust those intensities of color to make the red roses pop out. So that's the relative aspect of color. And also temperature. You have to think relative with color temperature as well.
Yeah. Or put the opposite. If you want that red barn to look more red, you can put a green bush next to it. It's
exactly
the opposite of on the color scale. If you want to talk about temperature intensity, that's another way of ramping up the intensity of a color.
Use complementary colors to make one pop out a bit more.
Yeah.
Or gray. And a lot of times I will... I will make sure I add a little bit of complement to everything for the whole block end of a painting. So when I get towards the end, I haven't used any pure color or even two color mixtures. I've had three colors in everything. So at the end, I will decide where I want the strongest color. And that's when it makes a statement, is when everything else is at least slightly muted. Then wherever you put that more pure color, it's going to really jump out more or make more of a statement.
Yeah, and this is all, a lot of this is being demonstrated inside our Easel Insight membership. We do, step-by-step demos, and we kind of illustrate a lot of these points right on the camera.
Yeah.
So make sure if you're not a member yet, get on the wait list if we happen to be closed because we open enrollment.
Yeah, it's a real helpful resource that you can always access.
Yeah,
And it focuses on, again, composition.
It's not a workshop. It's not a workshop. There's a group involved with it, but it's more of sort of a, because painting takes time, and when you take a 4-day workshop, it's great. It's you can learn stuff. I've taken workshops before, but I learned most of it afterwards, months and months and months afterwards. Some of these things that I remember the teacher saying to me, and it didn't happen in the workshop. It's just
exactly
it's a high possibility that you will not come out with better paintings per se from a workshop, but you will come away with certain key things that you're going to use as a tool, as a key for the rest of that year or two, about the rest of your life probably.
Yeah.
But for sure as you're growing. So that's what Easel Insight membership is that's
kind of like an art library. You
yeah.
can always go back to refresh.
Yeah.
Like you say, at a workshop, what you should come away with is an understanding of how to practice, how to proceed once you leave the workshop. And I think that's what Easel Insight will give
us. Yeah, so all these things are being demonstrated there. And so we just want to keep it simple on this episode, because it could kind of get complex, and there's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
It's more about doing than talking to. So make sure you re-listen and take notes.
Yeah, and check out the PDF. We'll have some illustrations in there.
We're gonna have some things in some of these things that we discussed here.
Yeah, and I think it just goes to show that when you're doing a painting, using reference especially, don't just mindlessly copy. Think about the relative relationships between value and color. And
It's not accidental.
It gets you more involved in the painting than just copying.
Yeah, it's not accidental. So make sure you think about these concepts when you start your next painting. Yep. So we'll see you at the next podcast.
See you then.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Easel Talk, the podcast that takes your art to the next level. Subscribe to and review our podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out our website, easelinsight.com, for more episodes and information. See you next time on Easel Talk.